Chapter 148. Rob the Grinder loses his plus. The porter at the iron gate which shut the courtyard from the street had left the little wicket of his house open and was gone away, no doubt to mingle in the distant noise at the door of the great staircase. Lifting the latch softly, Carker crept out, and shutting the jangling gate after him with as little noise as possible, hurried off. In the fever of his mortification and unavailing rage, the panic that had seized upon him mastered him completely. It rose to such a height that he would have blindly encountered almost any risk, rather than meet the man of whom, 2 hours ago, he had been utterly regardless. His fierce arrival, which he had never expected, the sound of his voice, there having been so near a meeting, face to face, he would have braved out this, after the first momentary shock of alarm, and would have put as bold a front upon his guilt as any villain. But the springing of his mind upon himself, seemed to have rent, and shivered all his hardihood and self-reliance. Spurned like any reptile, entrapped and mocked, turned upon, and trodden down by the proud woman whose mind he had slowly poisoned, as he thought, until she had sunk into the mere creature of his pleasure. Undeceived in his deceit, and with his fox's hide stripped off, he sneaked away, abashed, degraded, and afraid. Some other terror came upon him quite removed from this of being pursued. Suddenly, like an electric shock, as he was creeping through the streets, some visionary terror, unintelligible and inexplicable, associated with a trembling of the ground, a rush and sweep of something through the air, like death upon the wing. He shrunk, as if to let the thing go by. It was not gone, it never had been there, yet what a startling horror it had left behind. He raised his wicked face so full of trouble, to the night sky, where the stars, so full of peace, were shining on him as they had been when he first stole out into the air, and stopped to think what he should do. The dread of being hunted in a strange remote place, where the laws might not protect him, the novelty of the feeling that it was strange and remote, originating in his being left alone so suddenly amid the ruins of his plans, his greater dread of seeking refuge now, in Italy or in Sicily, where men might be hired to assassinate him, he thought, at any dark street corner, the waywardness of guilt and fear, perhaps some sympathy of action with the turning back of all his schemes impelled him to turn back to, and go to England. I am safer there, in any case. If I should not decide, apostrophe he thought, to give this fool a meeting, I am less likely to be traced there, than abroad here, now. And if I should, this cursed fit being over, at least I shall not be alone, without a soul to speak to, or advise with, or stand by me. I shall not be run in upon and worried like a rat. Apostrophe, he muttered Edith's name, and clenched his hand. As he crept along, in the shadow of the massive buildings, he set his teeth, and muttered dreadful imprecations on her head, and looked from side to side, as if in search of her. Thus, he stole on to the gate of an inn yard. The people were abed, but his ringing at the bell soon produced a man with a lantern, in company with whom he was presently in a dim coach house, bargaining for the hire of an old phaeton, to Paris. The bargain was a short one, and the horses were soon sent for. Leaving word that the carriage was to follow him when they came, he stole away again, beyond the town, past the old ramparts, out on the open road, which seemed to glide away along the dark plain, like a stream. Whither did it flow? What was the end of it? As he paused, with some such suggestion within him, looking over the gloomy flat, where the slender trees marked out the way, again that flight of death came rushing up, again went on, impetuous and resistless, again was nothing but a horror in his mind, dark as the scene and undefined as its remotest verge. There was no wind, there was no passing shadow on the deep shade of the night, there was no noise. The city lay behind him, lighted here and there, and starry worlds were hidden by the masonry of spire and roof, that hardly made out any shapes against the sky. Dark and lonely distance lay around him everywhere, and the clocks were faintly striking too. He went forward for what appeared a long time, and a long way, often stopping to listen. At last the ringing of horses' bells greeted his anxious ears. Now softer, and now louder, now inaudible, now ringing very slowly over bad ground, now brisk and merry, it came on, until with a loud shouting and lashing, a shadowy postillion muffled to the eyes, checked his four struggling horses at his side. Who goes there? Monsieur? Apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, monsieur has walked a long way in the dark midnight. Apostrophe, no matter. Everyone to his task. Were there any other horses ordered at the post house? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a thousand devils. And pardons. Other horses? At this hour? No. Apostrophe, listen, my friend. I am much hurried. Let us see how fast we can travel. The faster, the more money there will be to drink. Off we go then. Quick. Apostrophe, halloa. Whoop. Halloa. Hi. Apostrophe away, at a gallop, over the black landscape, scattering the dust and dirt like spray. The clatter and commotion echoed to the hurry and discordance of the fugitive's ideas. Nothing clear without, and nothing clear within. Objects flitting past, merging into one another, dimly descried, confusedly lost sight of, gone. Beyond the changing scraps of fence and cottage immediately upon the road, a lowering waste. Beyond the shifting images that rose up in his mind and vanished as they showed themselves, a black expanse of dread and rage and baffled villainy. Occasionally, a sigh of mountain air came from the distant Jura, fading along the plain. Sometimes that rush which was so furious and horrible, again came sweeping through his fancy, passed away, and left a chill upon his blood. The lamps, gleaming on the medley of horses' heads, jumbled with the shadowy driver, and the fluttering of his cloak, made a thousand indistinct shapes, answering to his thoughts. Shadows of familiar people, stooping at their desks and books, in their remembered attitudes. Strange apparitions of the man whom he was flying from, or of Edith. Repetitions in the ringing bells and rolling wheels, of words that had been spoken. Confusions of time and place, making last night a month ago last night home now distant beyond hope, now instantly accessible. Commotion, discord, hurry, darkness, and confusion in his mind, and all around him. Hallo. Hi. Away at a gallop over the black landscape. Dust and dirt flying like spray, the smoking horses snorting and plunging, as if each of them were ridden by a demon, away in a frantic triumph on the dark road whither? Again the nameless shock comes speeding up, and as it passes, the bells ring in his ears whither? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the wheels roar in his ears whither? Apostrophe, apostrophe, all the noise and rattle shapes itself into that cry. The lights and shadows dance upon the horses' heads like imps. No stopping now. No slackening. On the way with him upon the dark road wildly. He could not think to any purpose. He could not separate one subject of reflection from another, sufficiently to dwell upon it, by itself, for a minute at a time. The crash of his project for the gaining of a voluptuous compensation for past restraint. The overthrow of his treachery to one who had been true and generous to him, but whose least proud word and look he had treasured up, ad interest, for years for false and subtle men will always secretly despise and dislike the object upon which they fawn, and always resent the payment and receipt of homage that they know to be worthless. These were the themes uppermost in his mind. A lurking rage against the woman who had so entrapped him, and avenged herself was always there. Crude and misshapen schemes of retaliation upon her, floated in his brain, but nothing was distinct. A hurry and contradiction pervaded all his thoughts. Even while he was so busy with this fevered, ineffectual thinking, his one constant idea was, that he would postpone reflection until some indefinite time. Then, the old days before the second marriage rose up in his remembrance. He thought how jealous he had been of the boy, how jealous he had been of the girl, how artfully he had kept intruders at a distance, and drawn a circle round his dupe, that none but himself should cross, And then he thought, had he done all this to be flying now, like a scared thief, from only the poor dupe? He could have laid hands upon himself for his cowardice, but it was the very shadow of his defeat, and could not be separated from it. To have his confidence in his own knavery so shattered at a blow, to be within his own knowledge such a miserable tool, was like being paralyzed. With an impotent ferocity he raged at Edith, and hated Mr. Dombey and hated himself, but still he fled, and could do nothing else. Again and again he listened for the sound of wheels behind. Again and again his fancy heard it, coming on louder and louder. At last he was so persuaded of this, that he cried out, "Stop, preferring even the loss of ground to such uncertainty." The word soon brought carriage, horses, driver, all in a heap together, across the road. "The devil!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried the driver, looking over his shoulder, "what's the matter?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, hark!" "What's that?" "Apostrophe, what?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, that noise?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah heaven, be quiet, cursed brigand!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," to a horse who shook his bells, "what noise?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, behind. Is it not another carriage at a gallop? There. What's that?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, miscreant with a pig's head, stand still." "Apostrophe," to another horse, who bit another, who frightened the other two, who plunged and backed. "There is nothing coming." "Apostrophe, nothing." "Apostrophe, no, nothing but the day yonder." "Apostrophe, you are right, I think. I hear nothing now, indeed." "Go on." "Apostrophe, the entangled equipage, half hidden in the reeking cloud from the horses, goes on slowly at first, for the driver, checked unnecessarily in his progress, sulkily takes out a pocket knife, and puts a new lash to his whip. Then hallo, whoop. Hallo, hi. Apostrophe away once more, savagely. And now the stars faded, and the day glimmered, and standing in the carriage, looking back, he could discern the track by which he had come, and see that there was no traveler within view, on all the heavy expanse. And soon it was broad day, and the sun began to shine on cornfields and vineyards, and solitary laborers, risen from little temporary huts by heaps of stones upon the road, were, here and there, at work repairing the highway, or eating bread. By and by, there were peasants going to their daily labor, or to market, or lounging at the doors of poor cottages, gazing idly at him as he passed. And then there was a post yard, ankle-deep in mud, with steaming dunghills and vast outhouses half-ruined, and looking on this dainty prospect, an immense, old, shadeless, glaring, stone chateau, with half its windows blinded, and green damp crawling lazily over it, from the balustraded terrace to the taper tips of the extinguishers upon the turrets. Gathered up moodily in a corner of the carriage, and only intent on going fast except when he stood up, for a mile together, and looked back, which he would do, whenever there was a piece of open country he went on, still postponing thought indefinitely, and still always tormented with thinking to no purpose. Shame, disappointment, and discomfiture gnawed at his heart, a constant apprehension of being overtaken, or met, for he was groundlessly afraid even of travelers, who came towards him by the way he was going oppressed him heavily. The same intolerable awe and dread that had come upon him in the night, returned unweakened in the day. The monotonous ringing of the bells and tramping of the horses, the monotony of his anxiety and useless rage, the monotonous wheel of fear, regret, and passion, he kept turning round and round, made the journey like a vision, in which nothing was quite real, but his own torment. It was a vision of long roads, that stretched away to an horizon, always receding and never gained, of ill-paved towns, uphill and down, where faces came to dark doors and ill-glazed windows, and where rows of mud-bespattered cows and oxen were tied up for sale in the long narrow streets, butting, and lowing, and receiving blows on their blunt heads from bludgeons, that might have beaten them in, of bridges, crosses, churches, post yards, new horses being put in against their wills, and the horses of the last stage reeking, panting, and laying their drooping heads together dolefully at stable doors of little cemeteries with black crosses settled sideways in the graves, and withered wreaths upon them dropping away, again of long, long roads, dragging themselves out, uphill and down, to the treacherous horizon of morning, noon, and sunset, night, and the rising of an early moon, of long roads temporarily left behind, and a rough pavement reached, of battering and clattering over it, and looking up, among house roofs, at a great church tower, of getting out and eating hastily, and drinking draughts of wine, that had no cheering influence, of coming forth afoot, among a host of beggars, blind men with quivering eyelids, led by old women holding candles to their faces, idiot girls, the lame, the epileptic, and the palsied, of passing through the clamor, and looking from his seat at the upturned countenances and outstretched hands, with a hurried dread of recognizing some pursuer pressing forward, of galloping away again, upon the long, long road, gathered up, dull and stunned, in his corner, or rising to see where the moon shone faintly on a patch of the same endless road miles away, or looking back to see who followed. Of never sleeping, but sometimes dozing with unclosed eyes, and springing up with a start, and a reply aloud to an imaginary voice. Of cursing himself for being there, for having fled, for having let her go, for not having confronted and defied him. Of having a deadly quarrel with the whole world, but chiefly with himself. Of blighting everything with his black mood as he was carried on and away. It was a fevered vision of things past and present all confounded together, of his life and journey blended into one, of being madly hurried somewhere, whither he must go, of old scenes starting up among the novelties through which he traveled, of musing and brooding over what was past and distant, and seeming to take no notice of the actual objects he encountered, but with a wearisome exhausting consciousness of being bewildered by them, and having their images all crowded in his hot brain, after they were gone. A vision of change upon change, and still the same monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet, and no rest. Of town and country, postyards, horses, drivers, hill and valley, light and darkness, road, and pavement, height and hollow, wet weather and dry, and still the same monotony of bells and wheels, and horses' feet, and no rest. A vision of tending on at last, towards the distant capital, by busier roads, and sweeping round, by old cathedrals, and dashing through small towns and villages, less thinly scattered on the road than formerly, and sitting shrouded in his corner, with his cloak up to his face, as people passing by looked at him. Of rolling on, always postponing thought, and always racked with thinking, of being unable to reckon up the hours he had been upon the road, or to comprehend the points of time and place in his journey. Of being parched and giddy, and half mad. Of pressing on, in spite of all, as if he could not stop, and coming into Paris, where... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.